You've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? And welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we're talking all about personas and archetypes. The Mary Kay and Ashley of UX design. Related but different? What are they? How are they different? And how to find the perfect one for your project needs. So ladies, I have to know, how have your weeks been?
Hello, hello. Thank you for asking, Lauren. Yeah, I've been pretty well this week. 2 weeks ago, we had to cancel recording this pod because I was a bit unwell. And it's amazing how much you appreciate your health after an episode of not being well. So this week, I've gone on walks. I've tried to kind of enjoy my refound health, taking it quite slow, both at work and in my personal life. And yeah, quite chill on my end. How about you two?
So good to hear, Lavinia. And yeah, sorry to hear that you weren't feeling well. I can really relate that desire to take care of your health, especially after you've not been feeling too good because I got COVID. Haha. I mean, which part of London hasn't got COVID yet? Just before Christmas. And honestly, it wasn't that bad because I had 2 shots, thankfully, of the vaccine. But still, I just felt mopey and felt like doing nothing. And after I slept tons, I just felt so much better and like determined to actually take care of my health, which leads on to quite a funny story. So my brother has been running recently and he decided to go get vitamins to support the fact that he was running quite a lot every week. And I think he went and got like the Wellman 50 plus tablets or something because they were on sale in Holland and Barrett. So yeah, I think I took a leaf from his book and I've been trying to take some vitamins as well just to feel a bit more awake. Yeah. So in terms of how I've been recently, actually not that great because I just got my wisdom tooth taken out this week. And it's been, yeah, just, you know, trying to take it easy, like recover, try and sleep a lot and give my body time to heal. But just really excited to be back in the studio recording with you both.
Amazing. And you said, like, I have to say, when you came out the other side of COVID, you looked 3 years younger. And I was like, what are your secrets? Tell me everything. And you're like, I slept. Wow. What's that like? No. And yeah, Lavinia, so glad that you're feeling better and you've got a new lease on life. And from my end, health-wise, it's been quite uneventful, which is like a blessing. Me and my aunt, we risked it all. So we went on a little shopping adventure and we actually had to go to like Oxford Street, which is a very busy shopping epicenter. And we were just looking at some purses and we were like super excited. We're like, okay, here's our, like our last shop. We're going to go check out their stock. And so we're just about to like cross the street to go over. And then there was a huge anti-vaxxer rally. And they were like, they had commandeered the entire street. So we're like, no, leave the purses. Just run. And so we had to cut our shopping trip short because we were not willing to risk it. Ooh. Risk crossing the sea of anti-vaxxers. It was rowdy.
My condolences to your shopping.
I know.
It's okay. In a lovely twist, I just ended up taking the purse I currently had to the shop and they're like, we can repair it. And I was like, amazing. Because I didn't even want a new one. I just wanted my old one, like a carbon copy of it. So
I totally know the feeling of when you really love an item and you just like want the same one. So yeah, repairing it is awesome.
Yeah. And speaking of something that never needs to be fixed, we're talking all about personas and archetypes today. So as we mentioned, these are kind of the Mary Kay and Ashley of UX. They're very similar and different. So we're going to kick things off by talking about what are personas. So a persona is a fictitious character created to represent a type of specific user in your product's user base. Their goals and characteristics should represent the needs of the larger group of general users. When we think about personas, it's also important to think about what kind of artifacts would go with that. So personas are usually presented as 1 to 2 page documents or slides if you're a consultant that include facets that run along the lines of behavioral patterns, goals and motivating factors, their dislikes, skills, attitudes, their relationship to the product and other components. And then to add more of a personal touch, because you're building this fictitious character to represent someone that might use your product. You might have fun and partake in a Sims-like activity and create details such as like an image so you actually have like a visual representation of them. Their age, geography, their occupation, maybe their role in the family. You know, some quotes. Live, laugh, love. Even sometimes I've seen one with their like relationship status and I like just going by the board and being like, good to know you're single.
It's complicated.
Yeah. On the rocks. Married 3 times, currently divorced and dating a 20-year-old.
I'm sure the stakeholders really appreciate that. FYI.
It's just like I get the writers of like soap operas to come on board and write a whole backstory.
Do you voice over how that's relevant to the product as well? Like, yeah.
I'm like, Bartholomew is a complex individual who will not be ignored.
Nope.
Personas help to build empathy by creating a fake real person to represent that kind of subset of users. And this can really help some people get away from a very self-referential design where they're like, this is what I want. So if they see an image or they have a fully fleshed out character, they might steer away from that. Because as we know, usually the designer is not the user. So this exercise can really help people to not be generic or random. Also, it can help if you've got a product with a lot of users to help visualize and personify a whole range of them as opposed to just thinking of the user as like X. So you can get into the nitty-gritty there.
Nice. And on the other side of Mary-Kate and Ashley, we have archetypes. So I'm going to come out here and say that archetypes are my favorite. And that is because they tend to be less focused on personal attributes and more focused on behavioral patterns. So they're not as prescriptive and they do not offer as many details about like a customer's demographic. We tend to not mention things like age or gender or sexual orientation or any of those things that we might in a persona. I can admit that in specific products, those details can be relevant. So for example, if you are creating a product specifically for women, the gender might be relevant. But I find that often when we create personas, they're not as relevant, which is why I fell in love with archetypes recently and a bit out of love with personas. But if, for example, we're thinking of archetypes, one example that comes to mind for me is if you think about Audible, a persona would be someone that, let's say, is a teenager and loves reading John Green. This is me, by the way, when I was a teenager.
Retweet.
And listens to like romance audiobooks and might listen to a true crime podcast as well, like, and lives in a village, whatever, like you create this persona of a teenager. When you're thinking about archetypes, you can think about something like the romance reader or the speed reader or like the nonfiction reader or the podcast listener. There can be people that listen to 3-hour audiobooks or people who listen to 30-hour audiobooks. And the fact their age or gender or anything else doesn't really matter. What puts them together is like their behavior, really listening to 30-hour audiobooks. And that's why I like them more.
I think actually, Lavinia, that's such a great spin on it and definitely helps me contextualize what the key differences between personas and archetypes are. So thank you very much for that concrete example. I loved it. I think, to be honest, like my own experience with using personas and archetypes has been pretty limited somewhat. But I want to extend this question to you. How have you used personas and archetypes in the past?
Yeah, so probably because of my lack of love for them recently, I've been using them less over the past few years. But one time where I actually really enjoyed creating them and using them has been maybe 2 years ago. We were working for a UK supermarket and we were basically redesigning the online purchase experience. We had a very tight budget and very tight time, but I was working with our design lead and both of us were really, really passionate about doing things by the book despite those two constraints. We went and spoke to our friends and family and we wanted to basically understand the behaviors of the people we interviewed around online grocery shopping. And the big constraint there was obviously they were people who were probably educated or, yeah, people who lived in urban areas. So the data wasn't super comprehensive. We weren't representing like the whole of the country, but it was still useful. We came up with three personas. One of them was more of a family. One of the parents would plan different meals for the family and how like that manifest in their behaviors, intention, goals, and things like that, how they would have a budget. Then the second persona was someone who was quite health oriented and was quite frustrated about the fact that a lot of the recommendations, especially online, were very much like, oh, crisps are on offer, Coke is on offer, and they weren't getting very health-oriented foods. And the third one was the browser persona, where this was actually very much based on my friend, who was saying that she has a list on her mind, but her favorite part about going grocery shopping in a real store is just going between the aisles and discovering new snacks and things like that. And she felt like they didn't really cater for that in the online world, simply because everything is very rigidly categorized and you have to know what you're getting in order to get it. You don't have that experience of discovering new things. So those were our three personas, and we tried our best to cater for all of them in the redesign, and that was really fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love the example, actually. Like, thank you for going into so much depth and detail on how you, on your methodology, so how you sampled people from your lives and interviewed them and then used that really to try and come up with some personas. I think that's super interesting. What about you, Lauren?
So in some of my most recent projects, it's always interesting, like when we get to that stage where we're like, should we do personas? Should we do archetypes? And I would say like every time the debate has been had, I found most recently we have leaned towards archetypes simply because of time pressure, as well as we wanted to keep in line with a more functional understanding of the user, as opposed to making up all these like character traits about them. So yeah, in my past three projects, we've steered towards archetypes, which I think has been quite in line with what I've been seeing as a trend in the space. What about you, Yusen?
On my end, I certainly haven't worked with them a great deal. In one of my initial projects, it was a short one, and we didn't have a lot of time to do a whole ton of research and had to go off on what the client thought their user group looked like in order to come up with these quick personas based on stakeholder assumptions, which we then played back. And those personas were really helpful just for aligning everyone and just getting a general sense of what the stakeholders thought their broad users would look like. And then using those personas and creating an empathy or a customer journey map based on that one persona's experience. And I think more recently, yeah, probably tending towards archetypes, to be honest, I've recently discovered that actually there are quite a few different types of personas. Often we think about, you know, personas as just being these fictional representations of certain types of customers that we have. But actually, you can come up with personas at the early stage of your project, and using some of these stakeholder assumptions or co-creating these personas together with your stakeholders, and then further on the line, actually running qualitative interviews to try and validate some of your personas. So your personas don't always have to be static. You can start off with just creating a simple persona and writing down key traits of people who you think fit within your customer base. But subsequently, you can also just validate that by running user interviews and then trying to look through the user interviews for common patterns in different people you speak to, and then using that to inform and go back to your persona and just like validate a bit more.
I think it's a brilliant point that they don't have to be static. And I think we forget that very often, especially when we get really busy and within the delivery timelines, the customers can change or our understanding of the customers can change. New information can come to light. I love that you pointed that out, that they can be very flexible and they can evolve just like your product and your designs and everything else.
It can almost be like a living document where maybe they're evolving or maybe you discover a new subset of user, but regardless, I think both should be heavily based in research, which sometimes we run the risk with tight timelines of trying to whip them up before we truly understand our users up front.
Yeah, 100%.
To add on, I feel like sometimes in projects, like you say, with a tight timeline or where maybe there's not a great deal of UX maturity, people see personas as this deliverable that you have to create in order to show that you truly understand the user. But I think as designers, we now know we're making a lot of assumptions, especially at the start of the project, when we come up with personas, and it's mostly based on our stakeholders' understanding. Like you say, we can always make sure that personas are a living document that we can add to or take away from, and also just make it clear to people we're working with that, you know, this is not just a deliverable, that a pretty picture that we want to produce to show that we've done customer research. It can be something that we come back to time and time again. So we might start off with, you know, an early prototype of a persona, like a proto-persona, and then come back to that after we've run some customer research. And then if we have any more time or money that the organization can invest into more quantitative research as well, we can then understand like what percentage of our user base actually falls within some of these like persona or archetype groups. So you both referred to this, but they're not static, and yeah, they should be treated as a living document as such.
100%. I am curious on your perspective, if you think one is better than the other, or you have a favorite?
For me, it's archetypes over personas, because I feel like archetypes actually paint a broader segment of users, and they're a bit more flexible, whereas I feel like personas are incredibly specific. And I think personas are good for some things, like, for example, when you're trying to come up with a narrative of how a customer might use your product, you can talk about, you know, this person and kind of illustrate their experience of using a product, like what problems they might face. And it's really good for tying to journey maps. But I think in terms of looking at the bigger picture and taking a step back, thinking about the types of user groups your company's product appeals to, I do think that archetypes are easier to refer to in a way.
Definitely. Yeah, I would say it completely depends on the situation, like timelines, what your client's expectations are. Yeah, because personas can be quite time consuming, but they are really powerful in that you could really tie them back to real users. And the fact that they can also create a bit more empathy, especially if you've got a lot of different users. And also you can kind of create diversity with personas. And even go down to a level to consider things like accessibility. If there are people of different ability using the product, which you might not get from archetypes. Yeah, I think both are great. It depends on the context. But I have noticed a move towards archetypes. And that's been the case in my projects as well. How about you, Lavinia?
Yeah, I mean, this will come to no surprise. But I do lean more towards archetypes, simply because I feel like how someone behaves isn't always tied to demographics. And I think you actually said this before the podcast. I find that we can, without intending to, lean on stereotypes when we create personas. I would love it if you say more about this, because I think you said it really well before we started, and I don't want to steal it from you.
Yeah, we had a great conversation before the podcast started, where especially if there are tight time limits and you're trying to create a persona and it's not necessarily grounded in either any user research or the most solid user research, people can just kind of pull out a random character like, oh, this is a single mom, and then just add their own stereotypes onto that. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like tenfold stereotypes that creates this overall persona.
Yeah.
So you do run that risk if time limits are short and research isn't really done.
100%. So yeah, I definitely lean towards archetypes. Because even in your example, right? If you say single mom, someone behaviorally can instantly think of someone with very little time. And that can be true. But that, why not make an archetype of just a person who is very short on time? And there are many people who can be very short on time. It can be any carer, anyone with two jobs, and that can represent more than one super specific person. And that's why I lean more towards archetypes. But yeah, I completely agree with the stereotype and bias point.
And speaking of someone we'll never stereotype, we've got a Hotline Design hotline caller.
Hi, Hotline Design Hotline. I'm Adrian, a long-time listener and first-time caller. I'm looking to create robust personas and want a visualization that really stands out for Teams artifact board. Any recommendations?
Hey, Adrian. thank you so much for calling in. And great question, just all about having your persona and wanting a creative way to visualize that. I know that stakeholders really value artifact boards, especially when we're working in office. They love to be able to have visual representations of the work you're doing. I think it starts a lot of interesting conversations and centers the team's work. So in terms of some creative formats, I've noticed that you can have a lot of fun with personas in a way. There's a lot of creative freedom there. And I like some formats that are in the rough style of a Facebook page or LinkedIn, those areas where they already have a profile. So you can really leverage those. I would also, hot tip, I would also advise that you try to get a photo of a person that is not like a real person, because I'm always worried that I'll be on the internet just like googling like random woman and maybe I'll pick a picture of like an Iranian pop star or something. Like, I'm just so worried that I pick a person who's real and someone will recognize that and be like, ma'am, you picked a photo of an ancient dictator.
God.
So I would highly recommend thispersondoesnotexist.com, which is this crazy website where, I don't know,
is it AI,
the internet? What's that?
Is it AI?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It is an AI. It crawls the internet and like pulls people's faces together to make a person that does not exist, but looks like they could. Some are a bit glitchy and you're like, but then some are really convincing and you're like, do I recognize those eyes? Are those my friend's eyes and like random lips? So it's a really great tool for making sure that you don't make a huge mistake and grab some random famous person.
Yeah. I also feel for those people that got put on Unsplash quite early days, because I see the same people in people's portfolios so many times, mm-hmm. or like the same people on actual like company websites. Sometimes I see them in testimonials and I'm like, excuse me, this is from Unsplash. Like, this is not a real person. Don't fool me.
And but from Unsplash being like, you may recognize me in all my works.
Yeah. There's this, I remember like vividly, there's this girl, I think with a fringe and red lipstick, and she has this really big smile and I see her everywhere. There's this man with really intense eyes that I see everywhere. There's a lady with a bob that I see everywhere. There it's just the same ones. And I feel like, unfortunately, it says nothing about how good or well done a persona is. But I am starting to feel like the whole persona is made up when I see the same pictures over and over again, because I can't believe the same person can be Bobby from Doncaster and also like a Spanish person, you know, how they like make them up.
True.
So, yeah.
You wouldn't pull their picture from Unsplash.
Not anymore. I think at the start when Unsplash was new and we didn't see those people over and over again, I think that then it was fine. But I think we all in design now know everyone on Unsplash.
There's like an Unsplash convention and we're all like in a queue to get their autograph.
Exactly.
Either that or like serve them a notice for stalking.
I hope they're being paid a handsome royalty for like having their face splashed over 10,000 personas.
Unfortunately, I don't think they are, because all Unsplash pictures are Creative Commons, so like not even the photographer is being paid.
Oh, but yeah, there was that option to like buy them a coffee or something, right? By like contributing a little bit. Yeah.
They're so caffeinated, but yeah. Financially ruined.
Yep.
Oh, right. You know, that's such a great tip, like using thispersondoesnotexist.com. I think on my end, I feel like when I have created personas in the past, I like to use templates that other people have already created, just because it's such a time saver. You don't have to worry too much about how to like lay information out. Or even if I don't use the exact same template, I use it as a reference, which is always helpful. Typically on Figma, I found like a ton of editable templates. For me, my key tip for making personas look good is just to make sure you don't pack too much information on them. Just the key bullet points, and definitely use hierarchy to your advantage. So what I mean by that is, yeah, things like the name, maybe some of the demographic information that's a bit more important. Just, you know, maybe bold that a little bit, make the font weight a little bit higher. If you want, you can also create a mini type scale. Normally I do like three different font weights or stylings just to help me organize the information a bit better. And then the other thing that I would say is, particularly if you're very focused on their motivations or maybe their level of tech expertise. It can sometimes help to vary things up by using like a sliding scale graphic just to show where in the end or where in the spectrum of tech literacy they might be. And just throwing in a few visuals like that interspersed with some text really helps to make the personas a lot easier to read and to digest.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when we created the personas, we had some of those scales as well. Like, are they a planner or do they come to the supermarket with no list or anything? Or healthy, how much they consider themselves a foodie or like eats quite bland foods. And yeah, we use that in that spectrum.
So funny. I think that scale for a lot of people during the week of like healthy, extremely healthy. And then it's like once you've had like two glasses of wine and like a beer, you're just like, where are my chicken nuggets?
Exactly.
Where's that entire wheel of cheese? It's been a hard week.
Basically, please don't attack me like that. I feel attacked.
Vegan cheese.
No, I was going to say mine are like non-chicken nuggets and stuff like that, but I definitely reach for them, especially towards like the end of the week. In terms of tips, I often go towards Usin's route as well, where I tend to get a template. The main thing that I do to make it standard is make sure that I use the brand guidelines of the client. Because we're all in agency/consultancy setting, I try my best to put their logo in a corner, use the fonts they use the colors they use. So even if it's a template, I just personalize the template based on their brand guidelines. And that makes it look like you actually put a bit of effort in, despite that maybe taking you 2 minutes. So yeah, that's my main tip.
Nice.
Excellent. And thank you so much for calling in, Adrian. We hope that helped. And if you've got a question for Hotline Design Hotline, you can reach us at anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. You can find us on Instagram at hotlinedesignpod and email us at hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you next week.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.